Basilica Scope at Basilica Hudson is running today and tomorrow, and in its second year, it's dedicating its entire run to the legendary film director Alex Cox, with his cult classics Repo Man, Straight to Hell Returns, and Walker, a visionary filmmaker who made the 1980s even more cooler than they were already. He masterfully used satire and a rambunctious stable of actors to illuminate the politics of the time. Alex Cox will be in Hudson for the festival for an extended Q&A. The festival will finish off with a special 30th anniversary screening of the classic Repo Man. In 1984, Roger Ebert said of the film, quote, "This is the kind of movie that baffles Hollywood because it isn't made for any known formula or from any known formula and doesn't follow the rules." 30 years later, its spirit still rings true, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Alex Cox to the roundtable this morning. Sir, thank you very much for being with us. What a pleasure.
My pleasure, but you don't really think the 80s were cool, do you?
I love the 80s. I grew up in the 80s. I love the 80s. I do now. I don't know if I love them more now in retrospect, but I that was, you know, that was my youth. That was when I went to school. That was when I went to high school. It was when I graduated from college and high school. So I loved it. But I wasn't a, you know, and you're less a political animal. You don't realize how horrible everything is around you.
I suppose that's right, isn't it? Yeah, it's true. It's true. When you're growing up, you don't have the full, well, I suppose we never have the full picture. We never get the full picture.
And this is going to sound like I'm pandering, but I'm not. Although...
Go ahead, you can anyway. It's all right.
But it seems as though, I mean, one of the other great things about the time was the films. And Repo Man came out in the mid-80s, and I love that film. And that got me interested in wanting to see more things by Emilio Estevez at the time. And I thought, you know, that brought into the films of the time of Breakfast Club and so forth, which I thought were really interesting. So, yeah, it was artistically... And especially kind of the films you were making, absolutely.
That's interesting. Yeah, well, I don't know. I wasn't really a big John Hughes fan. So.
I'm not surprised at all by that. Although I was looking this up, trying to figure this out. Did Emilio Estevez make Breakfast Club before he made your film, or did he make your film and then go to the Breakfast Club?
I think that the only film he'd been in before Repo Man was The Outsiders,
yeah.
I think. But you'd have to look at his, or is it look on, you know, go on the internet.
Well, they give you the dates, but that's when they were released and not necessarily when
that's
they were
right.
filmed.
So when was The Breakfast Club released?
Both your films came out in 84. Or 84,
yes,
85, yeah.
Who knows? Maybe he'd made it, but they hadn't finished. Because we shot Repo Man in 83, and I suppose maybe Breakfast Club the same, I don't know.
Yeah. Now, how did you find him?
Let me think. Through the casting director, Vicky Thomas, because I wanted to cast a guy called Dick Rude in that role. But there was a certain amount of pressure from the financiers to have people who were, especially because Harry Dean Stanton wasn't really a known name at that time. There was some pressure to have some kind of starry or celebrity aspect to the casting, and because he was Martin Sheen's son, he qualified, you know.
Yeah. How aware are you of that or care about that when the actor comes in? Oh, this is Martin Sheen's son.
Oh, I hate it.
Yeah, I would think so.
I hate it because it's so unfair, you know. I mean, because the children of celebrities have such a, you know, they just get given everything, you know.
Yeah.
Do you know, I mean, think about that little movie that came out called Moon a couple of years back, you know, and it was a kind of like low budget sort of sci-fi movie that a young director might have made at the start of his career. But it was made by the son of David Bowie, and Sting's wife was the producer, you know, and so it's just the whole thing has just become so debased by nepotism and by, you know, people in the business getting their sons and daughters jobs, you know.
So with that said, when he arrived to you, were you happy with the performance and the output? Because it seemed like he personified this character.
I think he did fine, actually. I think he did a good job. Yeah.
He was a good Otto.
Yes, he was. I think Dick Rude would have been a good Otto, too, you know.
Harry Dean Stanton, though, is so priceless and seems to me to fit and maybe I'm way off on this, but seems to fit both your sensibilities and the sensibilities of what you were trying to portray.
Yeah, I think he's perfect in it, isn't he? He's just right.
Yeah. And how was he one of your stable of actors that you were looking to work with as much as you could?
Well, I would like to have worked with Harry again, because I really thought he was a very good actor, but he's a sort of a difficult guy to engage with.
Which is probably what makes him so good in this, right?
Well, I don't know. I think Harry would think so, but Harry's got the confused idea that in order to play angry, you have to be angry.
Oh, okay.
He's got that kind of method thing, which really is bull. Can I say that on the radio?
No, probably not, but that's all right. Well,
because acting's acting. You know, there's that story about Dustin Hoffman and Laurence Olivier on the set of Marathon Man, and Dustin Hoffman had done something like he'd stayed up all night, or he'd had a tooth extracted without anesthetic or something, so he would understand where the character was coming from, you know. And Laurence Olivier said to him, "Oh dear boy, have you never tried acting?"
So how much of that gets in the way of making a film like Repo Man? Because it's not, I think I heard you refer to it as, I mean, it wasn't a major release for Universal, right? It was...
Universal hated it. I mean, they didn't want to bring it out at all. But it was. But luckily, there was the record album. The record album is what saved the film.
The soundtrack. People wanted the soundtrack.
Somebody at MCA Records, one of the old gangsters, you know, at MCA Records, who had a lot more power in the Hollywood mafia than any of the execs at Universal, a guy called Irving Azoff, called the Universal Film Division and said, "You know this album, Repo Man, selling really well? Is there a movie that goes with that?" You know, and so Universal were kind of forced to release it by the record division.
And out it comes, and so since then, I think it's held its own quite nicely over the past three decades, hasn't it? I mean, it's gotten very nice response, and I think over the years, great credit to you and to the cast.
Yeah. I mean, I think it has held up. It's still funny, you know. So, and it's a good, but it's also a good sort of sampler of that, of all that, the Los Angeles music scene at that time as well.
A great sampler of the music, but let's face it, the theme, I assume that the whole point of the movie is nuclear war, right?
Yes.
So you watch the film now and you think, all right, well, this, here we are 30 years later, and oh, great, we're really pretty much back at the same place.
Oh, yeah. No, nothing has changed. I mean, there's slightly fewer nuclear weapons, but they're in the hands of more crazy people than ever, you know, so that's what we're looking at.
I had heard that it started in a almost a comic book sense for you of that was the way that you storyboarded it.
Well, I'd started doing it as a comic book, and I'd done four pages of the comic book, but you know, it's really a lot of work to do a comic book.
Yeah,
it's hard, you know. I mean, I couldn't do more than a page a day, you know, and so it was, I just was too lazy to pursue the comic book.
So you do the film, and how much directing experience had you had prior to Repo Man?
I'd done a lot of theater, and I directed a very long student film.
Mm.
So I had experience working with actors, although all young, you know. I mean, all guys of my age, you know. So it was, but I mean, I thought that was I like actors, you know, I really do. I mean, many people, if they see a room full of actors down the corridor, will turn and quickly walk the other way, you know, but I'm one of those people who actually really, really loves actors, you know, so I would go into that room.
When you do the film and it comes out in the way that you described it, I read the review that Roger Ebert wrote of this is the kind of movie that baffles Hollywood. I don't know if it was this way at the time, but now looking back on it, you have to take that as a compliment. I mean, that's like a great thing.
You know, what Roger Ebert thinks is of no interest to me whatsoever.
Okay, so let's take him out of the equation, but that idea of a film, of creating a film that baffles Hollywood, that has them sort of like, we don't know what to do with this, the reality of that seems kind of fun.
I think that happened quite a bit, though, especially with Universal for some reason, because Universal in the 70s tried to kind of get this kind of hipster thing going, and they funded films by Dennis Hopper and Monty Hellman and really, really interesting films like The Last Movie and Two Lane Blacktop. And then they sabotaged them all because they couldn't figure out what to do with them. I mean, they sought to be hip, but they were terminally unhip, you know. And so it always ended in tears.
And always ended in tears. So now they would be called indie movies. And I don't know how you feel about that, if that's a phrase that you like or dislike.
Are there still? I suppose definitely there are independent movies being made. The problem is distribution now.
Yes.
Because the studios dominate the cinemas to such an extent that it's very hard to get a theatrical release for an independent film.
Sid and Nancy, of course, was another of your films. It was the popularity of that movie. Again, this is a movie that has remained relevant. It's been around. How was that the response of that film at the time?
Well, that got a pretty good response, as I recall. Critically, it was pretty well received. I think it struggled a little bit in its distribution, but it was. But I think it got. I think it got more of a sort of a. It's a more straightforward film, you know. It's a more kind of. It's more docudrama about these.
Yeah, portrays the life of Sid Vicious
and his girlfriend Nancy Spungen.
And Gary Oldman was amazing.
He's very good, and Chloe Webb was amazing too.
Absolutely,
wonderful actors, both very good actors. And that was their neither of them had done a film before. That was their first film.
So, in working with young actors and their first film, and as you say, you like working with actors. So, what do you think that allows you to do and has allowed you to do in your career of working with these actors and, I mean, not molding them exactly, but at least getting the performance that you want out of them?
Well, how do you do it? I just think you create a space for them to work, you know. It's a casting thing, really. I remember I talked to another director one time who had been an animator, you know, had come out of animation, and I said, how do you get such good performances from your actors? And he goes, casting. Just cast it right, you know. And so that's really the thing. If you cast the right actor, you can just let him go. I mean, I just did a film with a guy called James Miller, who's like 21 years old, and he entirely carries the movie, you know. Has never acted in a film before, just graduated from University of Colorado, moved to New York to seek his fortune as an actor, and he's absolutely marvelous.
When you come to Basilica Hudson, you're going to be doing a Q&A on with Repo Man and
Straight to Hell Return. And after Walker, and that will be with Rudy Wurlitzer, who wrote the script.
So do you enjoy that, talking to the audience about what they've just seen?
No, because it offends the Tao. The Tao says that you should do your work and set no store by it, you know. but the way the arts work in our culture is that you have to be a promoter as well as an artist, which is unfair because it penalizes people who are shy, who aren't very good in public, you know, who might be great artists.
Right. But do you think it benefits the audience? I mean, of having more of an understanding and a backstory to what they've just seen and ultimately to your work? Assuming that people are coming because they've enjoyed your work.
Oh, I think, well, I mean, that sense, yeah. I mean, I was always very interested to see a film if the filmmaker was present and would talk about it afterwards, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely one. It's interesting from the audience point of view. But I think it's also, but the problem is it's a sort of cultural thing that then it does mean that you have to be kind of a boaster, you know.
Yeah.
And that doesn't necessarily mean you're a good artist, you know. It just means you show up for, you know, for things.
Are you making the kind of films and doing the kind of work that you enjoy doing now?
The thing I've just done, I really like because it's in black and white and it has no soundtrack music, which is a first. I've never managed to do a film that was entirely in black and white, and I've never managed to do a film that didn't rely very heavily on a score. You know, so I find it as fascinating to have done a film that doesn't depend on music to generate the emotions.
what brought you to that? I mean, why did you want to do that?
I always wanted to do that. I always thought it'd be very interesting to do that. But a lot of the time, you know. But the good thing about this is that because the film I've just finished was funded, or the film I'm finishing now was funded by Kickstarter,
yeah,
by crowdsourcing. So you're not actually answerable to a financier who imagines that they're going to see a profit off the thing, because our responsibility on this film is to the Kickstarter backers to make sure that they receive their DVDs or their Blu-rays or their spacesuits or whatever they get, you know. But we don't have to worry about the film being making money, you know, which is great. If it doesn't have to be monetized, then you're in a whole other world, you know, of art, of creativity.
And when it isn't monetized, there is, as you say, there's freedom, but then again, you also have that issue of distribution of who's seeing it and where does it go.
Stick it on the internet and let it go wide, you know, and people can download it for free and look at it if they wish, you know.
And it seems like you don't really care about that. If they do it, they do it, great. If not, oh well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, because you can't be... Because that's the thing, even though filmmakers and artists are expected to promote their work, but ultimately you can't impact the distribution. That's beyond anybody's... That's beyond the filmmaker's power.
So on Friday night, tonight, at 8 o'clock, you'll be at Basilica Scope 14. They're going to show Straight to Hell Returns at 8 p.m., a director's recut.
Yes, it's a longer version of the original film, with scenes that we originally took out have been put back. It's got a new color design by the cinematographer, who went through it and really changed the color palette of the film, so it looks really pretty great. Quite different. I mean, it looked great before, but it's got a very different visual aspect now. And we also added a whole bunch of digital bloodshed and special effects, and there's more skeletons in it and stuff, so it's kind of good.
Now with digital bloodshed
and stop-motion animation skeletons, just like Jason and the Argonauts.
Very cool. And then there'll be an extended Q&A after that. You'll return tomorrow for a showing of Walker at 7 o'clock, and there'll be an extended Q&A after that. And then following that, there will be, at 10 o'clock, a screening of Repo Man, the 30th anniversary screening, which is very exciting as well.
And Rudy Wurlitzer will be at the screening of Walker, so we'll both be answering Walker questions after that. And that's very exciting, because I haven't seen Rudy for years, and he's a local. He's the Hudson
absolutely
guy.
Well, it's basilicahudson.com for more information, basilicahudson.com. Alex Cox, thank you very much for being with us this morning. A great pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you. Very, very nice of you to have me.
Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.